Let's welcome everybody back in to the National Hour of the Rail Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary, and of course on Sportsnet as well. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. In a few minutes, we'll welcome in Stanley Cup winning coach Paul Maurice. What kind of summer did he have, boys?
Probably an awesome one.
Sammy loves talking to the coach of other teams who are better than the Leafs in the division.
I don't talk to them, so I don't have to say anything.
Loves when we have Cooper on. When we have Maurice on.
Nothing I love more.
How bad are they going to be? The first question, like,
who?
Florida.
Bad.
Buddy, they're still drunk. Yes.
You think they're going to come out slow?
Yes, it's going to be. How can they not come out slow?
It's actually a pretty good point.
Right?
I guess the old Stanley Cup hangover is real. But, I mean, that roster isn't. It's changed, but it's not too different. They still have the key guys there.
They do, including their goalie, which I can't really say right now for the Boston Bruins. I know we're going to get Paul on momentarily, yeah. But that is a huge story. This standoff between the Boston Bruins and Jeremy Swayman and his agent Lewis Gross to get a contract signed.
1 year they do arbitration and you get your feelings hurt, and then you get a whole summer of hurt feelings, yeah. Followed by this. There's some hurt feelings.
All right, let's welcome him in now. I tried to get him on the program after he won the Stanley Cup, and he said, I can't do a show right now. That's what I got when I tried to book you after you guys won the Cup. But let's welcome in a very sober Paul Maurice.
Well, I appreciate you giving me the couple months off. I really appreciate that.
Are you okay? I mean, does it feel like yesterday closing out game 7, and has everything felt like whirlwind, or you know, have you got your feet underneath you to start in next week?
Yeah. I mean, it was a dream week, you know. I mean, we won it. We didn't have anything planned, and that was wonderful. The guys stayed in the locker room the whole night and just celebrated, and then they disappear, as you know. The players take off. We had the parade. Free agency the next day. That was a Monday, I believe, and all the flights were booked. So it was kind of over really quickly, and got to this wonderful, peaceful summer. I mean, we head up to Lake of the Woods, and we had about 5 or 6 weeks there that it was really, really quiet, and it was needed, and the rest was great. I think probably about the first week in August, I turned my wife and said, all right, I'm ready to go back. Let's get her going. So we ended up back at the end of August, and everybody came back in, and they found a way to train and work hard because they came back with better numbers than they had last year at this time, and now we're back at it. It was a short summer, certainly by duration, but plenty long enough because it was such a peaceful time. You get to that achievement, that goal. You truly get to relax and enjoy the people around you.
So, Paul, you accomplished your life's goal. You'd been in the game for a while, and you finally got to the top of the mountain. Heading into this season, do you feel any different? Does it change your perspective heading into the season?
I don't think so. I mean, I was still worried the week before camp. So all the major concerns that you have. How are you going to fill the holes of the players departed? How are you going to drive the team? But so you watch very closely the first handful of days, and we have a difficult camp, and then the players all know it. So you're looking for the idea that we should do this maybe differently. Then maybe it was a little bit hard. We shouldn't have to do that. The opposite was true. They worked hard. They've pushed hard in this camp, a very focused group. But we'll always kind of keep our eye on that. What's different? What's changed? And I think, you know, we're looking for it in our adversity, and we're going to face it. We got a difficult travel schedule. We always do. But that's where we're watching for. When things get really hard for us, how do we respond? Is this, was last year enough? Where is your energy source? And sometimes having not won, and there's a kind of almost a negative but very powerful source, it drives you. You're constantly trying to achieve that goal. And then you do, it seems to me there's just a completely different energy source. It was so exciting. You have a group of people that you now have a special bond with. And I guess the way we've decided to view this, everybody's got a job to do here, or the coaches have a job to do, and that's to hold that standard. And we've been lucky with the group of men we have, where we're not having to pull teeth to get them to work hard. We're at that point in camp. We've pushed them hard now right from the start, that we'll start backing off them a little bit here because they've earned it.
We're talking to Paul Maurice, Stanley Cup winning coach, the Florida Panthers. So you've got a ton of experience. We know that. But what you don't have a ton of experience is defending a Stanley Cup championship. So is there anything in particular that you think might lead to a slow start or a Stanley Cup hangover? Is there anything that you've tried to already look for signs, or do you just fly by the seat of your pants when it comes to what kind of start you may get off?
Well, that's the summer, right? Nick, that's what you think about. So you call an awful lot of people, from GMs and coaches and players and trainers and fitness guys that you know that have won, and you collect as much information as you possibly can. The first place I'm looking for is, how do they test? And I don't mean the results of the test, the how do they test? Because you know what it's like in an NHL room. You got two or three guys, no matter what, are gonna test it flat out as hard as they can, because that's the way they're built. But there's a big block of guys that are on the team. They don't need to have a personal best on the Tuesday before camp even starts, especially after all the hockey we've played. So I'm looking for that, and they tested hard. But they did the 2 years prior. So those are the things that we're looking at. Where are the places that we are looking to try to do this thing easier? And it's always disguised as smarter, right? Hey, there's a smarter way to do this. It just turns out to be easier too. So we're looking for that. And then, of course, the results of those tests tell us that they found their way into the gym. So our numbers are better this year than they were last year and the year before. So from a physical point of view, we are stronger right now than we have been in the last 3 years. That tells you that they haven't, it's not a physical hangover. The mental hangover that you'll watch for is almost a perspective of the heart. So I'll give you an example. We went to the last 2 years, we played a Western Conference team that's not in the playoffs in November, and they on the road, and they beat us bad both times. Well, we're playing them in November again this year, and if we lose that game, it'll be the hangover. It won't be, it'll be the exact same thing happened the last 2 years, but there's the hangover, there's proof. So it's the perspective on the adversity that you face, the reason for failure. I mean, we had lots of stretches last year that we weren't very good. We had, I think, three blocks of four or five games where we played very, very poorly, and we found our way to write our game to the point that I think at the end of November we did that, or December rather, we went on a 9-game run. So our adversity last year was critical in that it taught us parts of our game we had to eliminate and parts of our game we had to get really good at. When we face that adversity, everybody on the outside is going to say that it's the hangover, that it's that they played more games than anybody else over the last 2 years. But if that was true, then our physical numbers would have been, we would have seen signs of that in our testing. Their bodies are fine. We have to manage how we handle adversity and not be afraid of it.
So I think back to like the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think they had 130 points 1 year, and then they get swept in the first round. And the idea that the regular season is crucial, you want to have success to play an easier opponent. You've finished at the top of the division and snuck into playoffs. How does it change when you face that adversity versus when you actually win it and have an easier opponent heading into that first round series? Like, because let's say you guys are great this year, Paul, you're not going to go throw some games so you can have adversity.
No, it's coming. It comes to everybody in every season. I mean, yeah. It's a rarity, and maybe that was our advantage 2 years ago when you look at the incredible season the Boston Bruins had. Maybe that's an example of a team that didn't face it. But, you know, even you look at Vegas last year, I think they won their first 11 games, and then they had to grind a long time. But after game two of the opening round against Dallas, they're feeling pretty good about their season. So the adversity that you face is necessary. It's coming for us. I think we have 14 sets of back-to-back games. We're going to Finland. Our schedule is never easy, just based on the travel in and out of Florida. So it's coming for us one way or the other. We start with Boston. We go into Ottawa, Buffalo, and then Boston again. So four big division rivals. Those games are all incredibly physical for us. I like it because it's either going to be a great jumping off point or it's going to bring adversity right to our doorstep at the start. So we might as well get after it now.
Paul, very seldom, even in a non-salary cap era, that a Stanley Cup champion team comes back and looks exactly the same than that won it. Bigger challenges, of course, with the salary cap. In today's world, you lost some key players. You had some challenges getting players re-signed. As a coach, did you kind of get involved and said, I can't live without him, but get rid of this guy, get rid of this guy. That guy has to stay.
No. No, you don't get that kind of leeway. I'm banned. When I was walking out before we left July 2nd, all the pro scouts were in for free agency, and I just said, no matter what, don't listen to me, because the four guys we signed in the summer month in, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with them, and then by the end of it, they were some of our best players in the final. So I'm not a pro scout. I've got an idea of what we want. You know what an advantage maybe I have? It's when I started and we were in Carolina all those years, and this is pre-cap era. I mean, we would play teams that would be $30 and $40 million over us. You know, when you think of the Rangers and Toronto and those times. We didn't have any of those throwaway players. We had to work with everybody that we had. We're at a point now, and this is a really good place to be. Our core has been very solid. There hasn't been that much movement in our core, but when you bring in guys like Stenlund and Lomberg and Cousins and Lorenz, you know, these guys have really big years for us. They're going to get paid somewhere else, and that's the attraction of coming to play for us right now, that Barkov's in the middle, and you've got Bennett, and you've got Lundell, so we're going to have a pretty powerful forward group. If you come here, you're going to have an opportunity to be seen and play well. So we know that that's the side we're in.
Just one thought on like Montour and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I mean, very important pieces last year. How do you fill the void of those guys gone?
Over the course of the season, and the first part is internally with what we have. So last year when Montour and Ekblad were out for the first 16 to 20 games of her season, we had Josh Mahura, who's now moved on, and Uvis Balinskas played, and we were a good hockey team. And Uvis Balinskas is back, and his name doesn't get out there. We've added Nate Schmidt and Adam Boqvist. So those defensemen right there are the guys that are on that list to fill that void. We have our younger players. When you look at Lusteron and Lundell, possibly Maki Samuskevich, our younger players are going to be better players this than they were last. And I would like to think at the third year in your program, you're farther along in the game that you play. We play an awful lot of tight, hard games, and that was true in the playoffs. And I think that really hit home for me when you come back and you do the video the next year to prep for the number of games that were so close and so tight, and it was one play in the third period that broke the game loose. And that was true for 2 months. So our expectation then is not that we won the Stanley Cup and it's going to look any different. We got to get it right back to that grind, to that tight game, and the 2-1 final game, that mentality is us. We believe we have the players to do it, even when we've had injuries. Historically, Barkov's been out for about a month. Bennett's been out for a month. We've lost a lot of these guys over the course of the year, but our structure's pretty solid. We got a pretty darn good team, and when we've needed to, our goaltenders have stopped the puck.
Paul, I know enough coaches to know that you're going to hate this question on the eve of the season, but I watched a clip this morning, and I saw Kyle Opozo after you guys won the Cup. He said to you, this doesn't define you, but it adds to your legacy. And do you think about legacy at all in your career and your time in the game and you know, the bigger picture?
No, like God, no.
Now you think about tomorrow, probably today.
I had it. Yeah. Here's what I'm thinking about right now. And Nick knows this because he's experienced it. And I don't know that he can necessarily articulate it very well. But because of what you go through, and to have that success, like I owe these guys, right? For what I put them through for 2 years, it was been hard here. And they've done it and they've worked. And those are the guys that kind of created the moment for me to be able to hold the Stanley Cup over my head. It was them. So I come back to training camp. I don't want to be the weak link. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be the guy that either comes off them too much or raises the bar to a point that you exceed realistic expectations. And that's where you lose the advantage of adversity, and adversity then crushes you. I think I'm just coming into hopefully my prime. I hope I'm a hell of a lot better this year than I was last year. Because I wasn't the reason we won the Stanley Cup. So I've got to get better in my game. That's on. When I walk off that bench the last day when they finally dragged me out of the rink and kicked me out, I'm hoping nobody ever talks about me again. It just can kind of slide out that nobody. I don't want to waste anybody's time any more than I already have.
You know, last weekend, Mark Messier had us down. He had our 94 Cup team get together. And to your point, to walk in the room and know that these guys did this for me, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like 30 years ago. So, Paul, you're like, can you imagine your reunion 29 and a half years from now?
I'll tell you.
Still coaching.
I'll tell you a great story. We're in the room after, and it's probably somewhere between the game ending and sunrise. And Vladimir Tarasenko stops me in the room, and he says, "Paul, whenever I tell a story, I tell it with his accent, but I won't do it." He says, "Paul, are you happy?" And I, probably some profanity, I've never been happier in my life. And he slaps me in the chest, and he says, "Wait, it gets better."
Ah.
And he says that to me. I'm thinking, how is that possible? Right?
Yeah.
The emotions change, but it does. Like every day.
Yeah.
And that's the summer experience. When you cross paths with your mom and dad or your brothers or any part of that family, everybody that you love is happy at the exact same time. And yeah, I mean, it's, I can imagine. I mean, 30 years from now, man, that puts me.
Yeah. You know,
I'll be watching above or below, but I don't know that I'll be in the room
again. Paul, it's, and again, I just experienced it with my 94 team. It's that internal peace that you have with yourself that never leaves you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I often tell people, like, you know, to watch a team win the Stanley Cup, it's great for 30 years to be whoever's beside you at that moment and go, I know exactly how that feels. And
you can't articulate it. You can't, but you use that word peace, Nick. And that's what it was for me this summer. It was the most peaceful summer of my life. It wasn't actually euphoric and it wasn't a party at all. We went 6 weeks up there. We didn't have anybody visit us. It was absolutely peaceful. And somebody said, so it was more peaceful than any other summer. I said, yeah, no other summers were ever peaceful. There was never a peaceful summer. This was the first and it was beautiful.
So, again, just being down there this weekend, Mark Messier's got this Game 7 documentary coming out, which is just absolutely fabulous. He covers every major Game 7 story out there in sport. It's with Amazon. It's coming out soon. And, you know, I mentioned to Paul that Trevor Linden played a key part in the documentary because he actually, you know, voiced along the series, and he was fabulous.
Really?
Absolutely fabulous. But to get to that point that you're talking to, whether it's just the excitement of it all or the peacefulness, there has to be suffering on the other side. And I can't, yeah. I'll never forget the look of Trevor Linden's hands as I crossed on the ice where he's covering his mouth and he's got Murray Craven beside him. And the pain that he showed me at that moment. And the only thing I thought of at that particular moment was, thank God that's not us. And yeah. I don't know, Paul, if you had a chance over the last little while to see that viral clip of the Edmonton Oilers dressing room. And while you guys were celebrating on the ice, what it must have felt like at that point for them.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing. It changes for you over time. I mean, I got to a Stanley Cup final in 2002, so that's about 7 years into my career. And it's, that was such a team, right? They had, I think, 11 Hall of Famers on that team. So you gave everything that you possibly had. But as you age and get older and you start to understand how rare that opportunity is, the pain of it when, well, I'll explain it to you this way. Somebody asked me, what do you think it would have been like if you had lost? And in truth, I can't even allow myself to think about it now.
Wow.
Like the idea of walking that cliff to look over what my life, I mean, I won't even allow myself to think about it because it can't. It terrifies me, that idea of to get to a Game 7, especially because it's true. Like when you look at Reinhardt's goal, right, 15 seconds before Dmitry Kulikov gets buried into his own net, clear in a puck that was 6 inches off the post. And that's it. After all your life's work.
That's the difference. The day, it comes
down to just that, and then that defines you. and somebody wins and has a night like we had, and somebody loses, and I've been on the other side of that twice, but it wasn't in a game seven, right? We got beat, you know, Detroit beat us in five. We lost in triple overtime in game three, and that's what put them up 2-1, but that's what broke us. Last year, by the time we got there, we had nothing left, but to get to a game seven, certainly, I'll only think about the one side of it because I just can't possibly imagine.
Mo, absolutely fantastic stuff, and we wouldn't expect anything less out of you on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate, and truly, you know, I appreciate the summer off. And all joking aside, Nick reached out and said, "Hey, I don't expect you to do this, but if you want to come on," and I took 2 months off of everything. And I really appreciated that, but it's good chatting with you guys again. So thanks for having me.
We appreciate it.
Well deserved, my friend. Well deserved. And good luck to start the season, man.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
That is Stanley Cup champion, Paul Maurice.
I mean, that was a really great conversation about the setting the stakes for the season, how it affects the lives of people who get it done.
Sammy, you okay with that?
Listen.
For our first show?
I've accused Maurice of certain things over the years, but you could hear it in his voice, the genuine horror of them losing that game.
But it's almost like imagining losing a loved one or something. Yeah, I can't even think about it. I just don't want to think about what it had been like if we had lost.
The first, blowing that.
They were up 3-0.
Yeah. And in game six, the Edmonton Oilers starched them. It was a beatdown. I can't remember the score, but it was 6-7-2. It was a... not even close. And everybody thought that the Oilers were doing it, myself included. And they played great in game seven, Panthers, they win. But I thought that stuck out to me, how much the genuine terror in his voice when talking about that.
Can't even allow myself.
Can't even go there.
So I mentioned to Paul briefly about the clip that went viral about the Oilers in the dressing room.
Oh.
Okay. And I do have an appreciation for the thirst to see behind the scenes stuff. And again, Amazon's going to be front and center with all of it soon. Mm-hmm. I understand it, but there's a part of me that just hates it, hates it. I just think that scene in the dressing room between Connor, his teammates, Zach Hyman, should just be between them.
Interesting.
I don't like that, you know, this is a place where their sanctuary is the room, just them. Let them have their peace. Let them just be them. Why do we always have to have an audience for everything? I hate it.
I'm torn on this one. Kip, because
there's no intimacy anymore just for the players. Everything has to be a show.
It is literally a show. It is an entertainment product to make money for businessmen.
Well, that just sucks.
It does suck.
I don't like it.
Just leave them alone. Where is some privacy for you? Didn't earn the right to be in that room. How's that? Amazon, fans, you didn't earn the right.
Listen, I agree with you. I actually agree with you. I think having that clip from a fan's perspective is a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and the chilling, just the picture of them hearing him announced as the Conn Smythe winner in the background and the looks on their faces, that's something that we should not be privy to.
No,
I completely agree.
No.
I think this is a great take. There is something intimate about it where I don't even feel like I can look directly at it.
No, I could barely watch it.
This clearly isn't for me.
I could barely watch it.
You know, but this is reality TV. Sports are just that now. It's, you know, people want this stuff. You know, F1, PGA, they want to be in your kitchen, your literal kitchen.
The problem is it gets to the point where it's now manufactured, and now you question, is this for you? Is it for the show? Is it to show how great of a leader you are? You're setting yourself up to leave some question marks.
But think about the layers this adds for the fans, the layers of understanding and I guess engagement, right? You get to see and know how much it means. People enjoy their fandom more having been privy to a moment like that. They can understand better. And so there's value in bringing that to them.
Buy a t-shirt. Okay. Keith Pelly. Sell another jersey.
What a disrespectful line that is.
I will say, watching that clip that we were talking about, I have never, I've had a lot of bad takes in my life. Like, tons. Every day, really.
Loads.
But I think my take of saying that Connor McDavid should have come out to get the Conn Smythe after watching that is my least favorite take of all time.
It was never good, that take.
No, it was awful. It was horrible. And now I watch that, I'm like, of course he wasn't going to come out. He couldn't lose his legs. Yeah. Like, he couldn't stand up. So, anyways, that's... I can't wait for the documentary, but man, it's going to be good. Oh yeah.
Through my fingers.
Will we have as much content out of that as we did out of that first one?
Which we carried us the Leafs one for 3 years. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Okay. Do we want to take a break? Because we've got,
we should do game time and then we'll hit a break.
Swayman news. We got Patrick Laine news. So
we'll do a quick game time.
Okay. And of course, this hour of Real Kipper and Born brought to you by Bet365. What do you got for us, Sammy?
Well, it's game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Now, I just brought this up because, you know, it's our first show, so I thought I should look at who's going to win the cup in a bunch of months. So the favorites, I put them on the lineup, so I don't get to ask you who you think the favorite is. But the favorite is the Edmonton Oilers at +800, 8-1. The next one that is stunning to me and is terrifying for every single Leaf fan listening to this, Bet365 thinks the second favorite to win the Stanley Cup is Sheldon Keefe's New Jersey Devils at 9-1. Is that surprising to you?
They had 81 points.
They got a goalie, right?
Two goalies.
Well, they got goalies. That's big. But the biggest thing is they had no Dougie Hamilton last year, no Jack Hughes. So you get those two guys back, and then they added Brett Pesce on the back end, Brendan Dillon on the back end, Markstrom. Like, they're way better. And the Metro is pretty weak. So, yeah, I think they're the faves there.
Pressure on Sheldon. Yep. Don't blow it.
Absolutely can't wait for them to win the East and the Leafs to be the eighth seed and play Sheldon Keefe in the first round. Going to be really fun as a Leaf fan. The next ones here are Panthers 10-1, Stars 10-1, Avalanche 11-1, Rangers 13-1, and your Toronto Maple Leafs coming in at 14-1.
Same as the Canucks.
Same as the Canucks. And the Golden Knights are the next one at 16-1.
That's the first time in a while that the Leafs have not been right up there.
I think the last couple of years they've been in this range.
Think so?
I do. Yeah. I think they've...
Oh, I think they've been in top five.
You think?
Yeah, the last few years. So. I think they've had top five ratings the last few years. This is the first time I've heard them, at least I remember them, this low.
I'm not going to tell you what to do with your money, but I would not bet on the Toronto Maple Leafs to win the Cup at 14-1. That would be my advice. But anyways, that was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds. Find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Happy to have Bet365.
Yeah, thanks for coming back. Yeah. Bet365.
Okay, let's take a quick break. And when we return, we'll get into the Swayman news and how ugly this is and where do we see it going. That and Patrick Laine. More when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Introducing Seeker, Canada's new app for discovering or rediscovering music. Dive into captivating podcasts, stay up to date with the latest news, debate last night's game, and laugh along with your favorite DJs. It's all there in one easy-to-use free app. Simply download Seeker. That's S-E-E-K-R from the App Store or Google Play. Find the radio, podcasts, news, and sports you love.
Seeker.
Seeker. Seek your sounds.
All right, as promised on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show, Sammy, what are you hearing on Patrick Laine? No surgery, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm hearing that. I'm saying I'm reading that from the Montreal Canadiens X account.
Yes.
He has a sprain to his left knee and that will not require surgery. His rehabilitation period is expected to be from 2 to 3 months.
Ugh.
Better than what
we're
looking.
We're definitely going to get into the swimming conversation, but... give me your early or later thoughts of the incident and the hit and what happened after that.
Sammy, would you like to lead this one off?
Would you like me to?
Sure.
I think that, is it Pear, the guy that did it, the Leafs guy?
Pear.
Hadn't really heard of him much before that game. I thought it was an unfortunate play. I think he did have his knee out. I don't think he stuck it out. I think his knee was out. It made contact knee to knee. Regardless of how that happens, usually in the NHL, it's looked upon as dirty. I think there's been lots of bang-bang plays that have been looked upon as dirty. I thought he probably should have fought Jack Eye, even though that's a scary thing. And I think Jack Eye probably should have got suspended for a game. How's that sound?
Okay.
Is that a fair summary?
Put a bow on that.
Yeah.
If we go back to Morgan Riley taking issues on the empty net in Ottawa last year, Jack Eye's pummeling of the kid was just as bad or worse, wasn't it?
Definitely worse. Definitely worse.
So how do you kind of, what's the difference?
You wanted someone to go Morgan Riley, Jack Eye?
No, I'm asking you in terms of the punishment fitting the crime.
Yeah, no, I think that is a brutal play, chasing around an unwilling participant and beating him mercilessly.
For the most part, like, you just took out their $9 million player. Like, what do you expect?
And I don't think Jack Eye's unjustified in seeking retribution there.
That's what I would agree.
I didn't think the hit was that bad. I thought the kid was planted and trying to get a piece of him. You know, I didn't think it was that bad.
But you know the way those work. Every knee on knee that we ever talk about is dirty.
You're like, on the hook.
It's, you know, it's tough to...
That's really unfortunate, and I hate it for Lina, who I was really rooting for this year.
Me too.
Coming back from some challenges, and this is tough.
So you think you should have got suspended then?
No, listen.
I think reasonable.
I think the league looks at it and says, no, you just took out their major player. He's gone for 3 months, and him wanting retribution is justified, and they backed off a harsh message. That's what I think happened.
The Department of Player Safety, the actual message, like their mission statement, one of them is preserving the physical, emotional nature of the game.
So they didn't like the Morgan Riley empty net, but they like the, hey, you took out their top player, and you should be ready. You should be ready.
Here's what I'll say. Like, if the situation was reversed and it was Jack Eye was on the Leafs, he would have been kicked out of the league.
Oh, my God.
Listen, I don't buy into any Leaf conspiracy theory
doesn't
crap.
Sound like it.
I really don't. There's so much crap out there about Leafs conspiracy theories, but Peros hates the Leafs. There's no question. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. Like, it's just, I'll say it. You guys don't have to say it. Like, he treated Spezza like he was a 10-year enforcer that had been suspended 4 times for kneeing somebody in the head. Like, 6 games for cross-checking a guy for slapping a shot in the net. This guy literally chased around another guy and beat him in the head with no gloves on. Should have fought him. No question, should have fought him. Should have just stood in there and take your beating. But he mercilessly, like you said, beat a man on the ice. He should have been suspended for a couple games. And Peros, when he looks at the Leafs, he looks at it differently. I'll say it. You don't have to. Hates the Leafs.
Love it.
There you go. Sorry, national audience. They had to deal with that, but it's the truth.
So
I like to have that side represented of the day. Listen, that's good.
I hate knee. Like, as a awful player,
nothing worse.
I valued my knees like I valued my eyes.
Yeah.
Like, if someone goes after my knees, I can go squirrely.
Agree.
It's a career ender.
Yeah.
Right? Potential. Mm-hmm. Career ender. So,
do you think he extended a leg to get a piece of him? I kind of thought he was planted.
He was standing still.
Yeah.
You're a defenseman. You're standing still at the blue line.
Like, I know.
Like, you really shouldn't be just standing there.
No, it's not great.
Right? It's not great. Of course, your thought is Craig Berube wants hard hockey, and it's like,
I got to get a piece of this guy.
Got to get a piece of him. So I'm going to get a knee.
Well, and he kind of already had his leg out, so he's kind of leaned on. I don't know.
In a perfect world, which we're not in, I'd be as hard on knee-on-knee as I would headshots. Mm-hmm. Like, let's get knee-on-knee out of the game. But guess what? You can't. You can't. It's impossible.
Yeah.
So there's going to be that gray area where you question, was it dirty or was it not dirty? And we're just going to have to move on with life with it.
Agreed.
And in this case, Paros was in a situation where they gave him the benefit of the doubt, but I get the reaction for sure, you know, but you know, it's exhibition, which really bothers a lot of people. Like, you got F1 cars out there, and then you got, like, you know, Don Valley Parkway drivers out there too. Like, you know, it's not perfect.
No, it's not. And you end up with stuff like this, and that's unfortunate.
I think what Jack Eye was mad at that's very, he's very justified in being mad. And I think that, you know, Paré probably should have just stood in there for his licking. But you don't, I don't think you get to do what Jack Eye did.
I agree. But I also think for a guy like Jack Eye, you're seeking moments to show what you can do and what you can bring to the team. And that's a moment where it's like, oh, this is me. This is where they need me to do this. And so I have no problem with him doing it. But, yeah, probably a game or two wouldn't hurt there.
Okay. Story everyone's talking about now.
Yep.
Boston Bruins. Goaltending situation. Where they made a key decision to move on from Allmark.
They traded their leverage because they had to.
And now they're in a situation where they can't get their number one goaltender, Jeremy Swayman, signed, which led to a press conference where Cam Neely... Do we have the soundbite?
We do have the soundbite.
All right, let's go to it.
Since you say you were surprised, Cam, can you share any other specifics here, be it what his ask is in terms of dollars or term?
Well, I don't want to get into the weeds with what his ask is, but I know that I I have 64 million reasons why I'd be playing right now.
Ooh.
Okay. First thoughts, JB, you go first.
My first thoughts are that's a conscious decision to put out there what is on the table and to put the pressure, the public pressure on the goaltender so people go, wait, he's not signing 8x8? Who does he think he is? This is a conscious decision, not a spur-of-the-moment thing.
Surprised that he said that.
I am too. People don't love it.
I wouldn't. I mean, if I'm...
And I also think Swayman's been through arbitration,
yep.
And now he's kind of been publicly embarrassed here, and I think that that's probably not great for their relationship, and that's might cost Boston some more money.
If I'm Lewis Gross, I am beside myself mad.
Yeah, my first thought is... don't negotiate through the media.
Mm-hmm.
That's my first thought, which I was really surprised that they wanted to throw that out there, which
they
he
must
did.
Be very frustrating.
News is filtering, I'm sure, from the Swayman side that and Lewis Gross has gone on record. It's not 64 million, which means that
probably 62
and a half.
Yeah,
right. It's, ballpark.
They get to say it was never offered they when say, they know they could get there.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
do you want me to read the statement?
Yeah.
From Lewis Gross?
Yeah, for sure.
From Lewis Gross, who represents Jeremy Swayman. Normally, I do not release statements or discuss negotiations through the media. However, in this case, I feel I need to defend my client. At today's press conference, $64 million was referenced. This was the first time that number was discussed in a negotiations. Like you said, it was probably 62. This was the first time those were discussed in our negotiations. Prior to the press conference, no offer was made reaching that level. We are extremely disappointed. This was not fair to Jeremy. We will take a few days to discuss where we go from here. Boy, so, I couldn't love this more.
Allmark has a no trade that was going to kick in before he got dealt. They had to move him while they could. Ottawa was on his list, I think, and they moved him before his no trade kicked in. So they have no leverage with Swayman at that point. And Swayman was one of the best goaltenders in the league for, 2 years in a row now, statistically. You got to pay the guy. Hasn't been the number one guy on his own, though. Hasn't shown that he can play 55 and do it. I don't think he played that much last year.
The biggest issue, I think, is that he's so young and relatively inexperienced when it comes to a contract of that magnitude.
Yeah.
Right? They're scared that he's 25 and he hasn't proven a lot over a longer stretch of time. So they're not sure still.
Goaltenders do just suddenly, it turns. They go bad. And then they find it again. Bobrovsky's contract in Florida has been great, awful several times over.
Honestly, mostly awful until the last 2 years.
Like the Carey Price big deal wasn't great. Like, there's some big money goalie deals that have not gone great.
Yeah, and they got to guard against that for sure. But I got to be honest with you. I think the pressure's on the Boston Bruins right now and not this kid.
Yeah. Do you think, would you be shocked if you heard tomorrow, they all right, 8x8.5. We had to give him $68 million.
Good math.
I think.
Is that right?
But here's the other thing, too. That I think, again, what Cam Neely started right now is he's thrown it to also
public perception. Mm-hmm. And then there's egos involved as well here. So to your point, if he signs tomorrow at 8x8, does Cam Neely look like a genius because he smoked out the deal through the media? And does Lewis Gross and his client look a little weak? Like,
I don't think that price is the price anymore. You know, that's the drop. I think Cam cost himself money there because I don't think the goalie would want to be embarrassed now and come out and say,
if he came out and signed 8x8, yeah, it looks like it worked.
Like, yeah, he bent the knee.
Right.
Yeah.
And I now think that that's the floor.
Mm. So I think it just makes both sides dig in that much deeper.
Yeah.
And Cam doesn't want to turn around and have to sign him to 8.5 or 8.7 because then, you know, it looked like it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And then you caved.
And also, you talked earlier in our Leafs Hour about top guys on the team kind of setting the bar or whatever. You know, like Brad Marchand's on year 7 of making $6 million. Like, there might be some Bruins upset with Swayman if he's looking for a big number, isn't playing. They're starting to lose games because Corpusalo's Corpusaloing. Like, it's going to be interesting here. And also, Sweeney has mentioned December 1st several times as a date, the kind of the final cutoff date. So it feels like it's at least going there. And if you're getting deeper into the season, maybe he gets traded.
Can I ask you if this has done irreparable damage to the beautiful Boston Bruins culture? The unfallible culture that's just the best in the league.
I'm just not sure, like, if they can just find a way to meet in the middle here. In a perfect world, as a negotiator, you want to create a win-win. And I'm not sure it's out there now for the Boston 25. Bruins and Swayman.
Everyone happy? You're $66 million.
So you do think that this caused some pretty big damage, what they just did?
I think it has a chance to,
like, they wouldn't
south.
Actually trade him, would they?
Yesterday's price is not today's price.
I think it would be...
He does.
Really, really difficult to do it now. So you have to start the season without him, which you will, even if he signs tomorrow. He can't be ready in a week and a half, 2 weeks. So you're going to start with a new goalie.
Mm-hmm. Who's not very good.
Corpusalo.
Or maybe you'll be all right.
Now, if the Boston Bruins get off to a good start, does the pressure go back to Swayman and Lewis Gross? If they get off to a horrible start, then is he in a better position?
Mm-hmm.
So you, much like the Marner conversation we had in the first hour, you got to see the way this thing plays out before you revisit.
You know, Corpusalo has a chance to play behind McAvoy, Hampus Lindholm, Zadorov, Carlo, that Lowry, which they like, and Andrew Peak. That's a good group. That's a very good decor.
So
I think it could end up looking great for Corpusalo.
We expect the Rangers to sign Shesterkin before the season starts.
Do we?
I do.
It's nice to know.
Okay.
I do.
Okay.
And I think they'd be pretty lucky to get it under $12 million.
$12 million?
11.25, 11.5, 11.75. That's the ballpark that Shesterkin is looking at.
That would be the biggest goalie contract in NHL history.
Yeah. But you got to...
That's going to be the new...
But it's going to be like the quarterback thing. Every guy that signs is going to be the...
Yes. Rigid. And
it, for sure.
They're not wrong. They're not wrong. Like, you cannot look at previous markets and compare apples to apples. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. There's new money coming in. The bar is raised.
Cap's going way up.
It's going way up.
Shesterkin's 28. You want a Vezina, right?
So Swayman is 25. Boston's asking him to give up 8 years. So from 25 to 33... which are prime years, mm-hmm. you're asking him to lock in right now at 7.8.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's like, he's not giving up UFA years 3 years from now to stay at 7.8 when in 2 years, if he goes to free agency and if he does what everyone thinks he can do, the guy's at 10 and a half. That's the new market.
But he's an RFA, Kip. Like, they can say, go ahead and sit
but
home.
You're
then.
Buying UFA years on a 25-year-old that is in his prime. So you're not getting 7.8. You're not. That's old money. It's under an old salary cap. There's new, fresh money in. In 2 or 3 years, he'll look like an idiot at 7-8 if he's leading the Boston Bruins.
I'll say this. Cam Neely's job is tied to this. Like, if you trade Ullmark and can't sign Swayman and your goaltending submarines your team and this was publicly handled like this, that's not good.
It's a great point.
I cannot disagree that, like, you needed to get Swayman under numbers before you gave away Ullmark. And somehow, some way, you let it kind of lapse, and you're in a pickle right now.
Swayman probably saw Ullmark get traded and went, oh.
Yeah, they traded.
That's $1 million per year in my pocket.
They traded away their leverage.
Yeah. They had to, though, or Ullmark couldn't or wouldn't have gone there, I think.
Well, they also had to because they had to assure that they had enough room to go get Zadorov and Lindholm.
Which meant they should have signed Swayman at that time.
How about the pressure of the Boston Bruins right now to with those two signings to go to the next level, but you don't have a goalie.
Mm, yeah. This is Sammy's like, oh, like oh this, no.
Like this is like the Abbey Road, the Beatles right now for me. Like, this is music to my ears, boys. Oh my God. Could the castle be crumbling finally? Please? Please.
You know, I don't know how this is gonna turn out for Swayman, but give the kid credit, man. He's standing up to one of the toughest negotiating teams in the history of the NHL. He ain't in Carolina or Columbus, man. This guy is taking on Jeremy Jacobs and the Boston Bruins on a contract.
It just feels like they're not going to cave. Just those guys, those personalities. Can't see like, Cam Neely being like, sorry.
I'm loving the makeup of this guy that much more. Yeah. That he's rolling the dice.
He's Alaskan.
They're confident,
tough-minded boy.
At the watch,
not
it.
Shocked.
Like he's playoffs. There's a lot of guys that would cave.
Yeah.
But I don't get the sense that this guy is one of them.
I'd have crumbled like a dry sandcastle. By
yeah. Oh yeah.
Good
yeah,
for
yeah.
him.
7-8 sounds great. Yeah. Sounds great, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, like, you know, the Boston Bruins, Corpus Owl put on that jersey and turned into Prime Hasek or something anyway. So that's what they wait. Like, and you know, they're gonna put. Lindholm's going to turn into David Krejci in his prime, and Zadorov's going to be Chara. So that's just how this will work out for them, because it always does.
Good to see nothing's changed.
No, listen, yeah. I'm not bitter about it at all.
No.
Not bitter.
Thrilled.
Yeah.
So are you done on that?
Yeah. We
only got 2 minutes.
Yeah, we got Demko. We got Reinbacher. We got Crosby. We got...
Demko's scary.
And Archer's Shelov's guy?
Shelov's. It's been okay at training camp. I think he's coming off like an unbelievable run last April. He should come in with some confidence.
So waiting to see what's going on with his knee still from game one of the Western Conference first round against Nashville. That's a little concerning. Are we going to talk to a doctor about this?
Yeah, I want to find a good doctor because apparently there's some muscle that's not reacting very well.
We're going to learn about this. We're going to have a group education.
We are.
Yeah.
We are.
I think I like that. On Thursday.
Oh.
Yeah.
I haven't told you yet.
But thanks for producing. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie Spies Like Us?
Nope.
Means nothing to me.
Nothing?
No.
Was it from 1984?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's definitely
Chevy
from the
Chase
51.
And Dan Aykroyd, and there's this scene where there's just like a million doctors in the room, and they just start introducing each other. Going, doctor.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. I've seen that clip. Doctor. I've seen that clip.
So that's what we're going to do.
We're going to get him on the air.
Before we go, fellas, if you'll just allow me 1 minute. It is my second wedding anniversary today with my lovely wife, Allison.
Why are you here?
She's going to a concert tonight anyway, so it's all good. We're doing a big dinner tomorrow night. But she, lovely woman. I owe her everything. So
happy anniversary,
Allie. I love you.
There
you
go. Have to sap up our show.
I'm a very loving guy. I just am. And unfortunately, big wife guy over here.
Clearly, you're in the doghouse.
No.
You've golfed too much.
No, you've golfed too much. I have golfed 50 times this summer. So,
and I heard you were at Toronto golfing.
Oh, yeah, with Elvis.
Yeah. In flip flops and yellow toenails. That's the report I got on Sammy.
Hey, that's what they say about me, buddy. Flip flops and yellow toenails. I'll put that on my tombstone, fella.
All right. Pretty good warm up.
Good show.
I don't know about that.
What? It's training camp.
like most shows, we've solved nothing.
Hey, you know what?
Get better every day.
I don't think the show sucked as bad as I thought it would. All right, we're just warming up here on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Stick around till July 2nd. We'll keep it real for you. Have a great night, everybody.